So hello, good evening, everybody. Welcome Cordelia to Embodied Health Learning, and welcome anyone watching live on Facebook, or if you've joined us in Zoom, thank you very much. And you can ask questions here in Zoom. That's the easiest place to do so is in the chat, and I'll field the questions to Cordelia. We'll pause a few times through this hour to take questions. And tonight, Cordelia is going to be talking about voice and embodiment. And we have a course coming up with Cordelia in July. It's a three-part online course called Voice and the Nervous System, the Human Voice as a Catalyst for Self and Co-Regulation. So it's really wonderful to have you, Cordelia. I know I found you and invited you to come and speak on the platform, so it's lovely to be hosting you tonight. Cordelia is a vocal embodiment facilitator based in London, UK. And you specialize in using the voice as a catalyst for embodiment, helping people connect to their core, find their voice, and become more fully expressed. And Cordelia's background is in operatic work as an opera singer, and this deeply informs your work today. There's more of a bio on our website. And I'm going to hand over to Cordelia to fill in some gaps and speak about what's relevant tonight. And we've got some themes and topics to talk about that wrap around your course. So over to you, Cordelia, to say a little bit more about what feels relevant to you to mention at the beginning of tonight's webinar.
Oh, well, I think you've pretty much named it. Obviously, a background in opera is different than a medical background. And yet my interest for embodiment came through my operatic training. So, and that isn't necessarily a given. So it's not that every singer has that path, but for me, it was that. And I'm happy to be here. So it's great. Yeah.
Fantastic. So maybe we could start with, I have here, you know, what's the difference for people who haven't, I've experienced some embodiment voice work with Philip Shepherd. And as you mentioned before we began, I'm doing RAG voice practice, ancient Indian voice practice. But for people who haven't associated voice with embodiment, what would you say is the main difference between voice coaching and voice embodiment work rather than regular voice coaching?
Well, that's a good question, but regular voice coaching can sort of focus on how you're coming across a lot. And so you're going into how you appear and you're trying to correct that. And so it's very interactive. There's a lot of feedback. It is also great work. However, the difference with embodied voice work is that I'm really helping people to use their voice as a means. As a means to connect to their body and to deepen their breath. And then we place a lot of focus on the vibration of the sound in the body and to get it flowing through the whole system. So, you know, very simply put, that's one of the big differences.
Cool.
We'll also, you know, working for embodiment with the voice allows us to create a space while we work that really enables people to go into the felt sense and to learn how their body feels from the inside. Because that's one thing that really sort of actually sparks me up a lot about voice is that it really is from the deepest depths inside working outward. Because it's, you know, if you feel, you know, the air going into your body, it's deep stuff, and so obviously, you know, we create a sort of environment that makes people feel comfortable, and the focus is very different.
Working with presentation and how we appear opposed to how we feel from our core emanating out feels like the key there. And you mentioned somewhere about the default mode networks, and my colleague Katie Sara teaches about that as well. If we're working on the appearance and our application of our voice rather than the quality with which we feel and express ourselves, Could you say something about the default mode network and how voice embodiment coaching bypasses that?
Yeah, that's brilliant. I love that. So it's such a huge topic. I could go on about this forever, but it links to the primal voice, essentially. And that has to do with, we start vocalizing and making sound before we can speak, before we even understand words, or when we have a limited understanding. So it's a direct expression that is emotive and it's full of emotion. So it's communicating a huge amount without any words, without the need for language. And there's a direct transmission from, if you see a baby, to the outside world, right? And that is connected to the primal voice. And that is something that we never really lose. And yet, you know, when we develop speech, we develop neuron pathways in the brain, like thinking networks, and they develop in connection to language. So language is in a way welded in our brain. And when I do exercise and we do exercises, we're doing like extensive toning and we're making sounds. And so we're actually accessing the voice at a deeper level beyond the habitual, the default mode network, which is all connected to how we think and what we think and our perception. And when we're just making sound, we're actually connecting to a far deeper mode of expression that bypasses that. And I mean, I could go on about this longer, but there are also reasons why and how, and let me say, methods how to work with a voice to bypass it, which also involves rhythm. It's an important one in connection with that.
As I understood it from my colleague, belonging is a big part of the default mode. So often our feelings, if they don't aren't conducive to our default understanding of retaining belonging, then we'll filter and censor what's filtering up into our awareness, or it hits a filter before it reaches our awareness. So I would imagine, from the bit of experience I've had, that helps to oil those wheels into breaching into awareness and therefore needing to be integrated and acknowledged. Is there anything you could say about that?
Yeah, that's spot on. That's beautiful. Because we're not using language, we can express and we don't have that filter. So then we learn that an emotion that we might sort of judge on a mental level, when we just allow it into sound, we experience it as an energy with a flavor and a color and a texture that isn't necessarily bad. Yeah, so absolutely, it's just that.
Cool. And just as an intro to tonight, the 3-part course on working with the nervous system, could you say a few words about what people will cover in that before we go into more of a discussion, if they've come because they're interested in the course that's coming up end of June, July? How would you describe the journey of that for practitioners? Because I know we've spoken about it, so I have some questions, but I think people would like to hear. But how would you surmise the journey of those 3 sessions?
Well, we're going to, it's a very limited time, but in that time, I'm going to give some essential theory around sound waves, around anatomy and physiology, and basically show how the voice is really connected to the social engagement system. For those people, you know, who are all into polyvagal theory, I mean, the voice is just It is the social engagement system. There's nothing more akin to it than the voice. And we're going to do some exercises. I'm going to show various exercises, and we're going to also look how does a voice sound that is, sympathetically over aroused. How does that reflect in your voice? And then what can you do with your voice to downregulate it? Also, the opposite, if you're in a parasympathetic sort of shutdown freeze state, how can you, use your voice to activate the energy? So we're going to be looking at those things.
Lovely. Someone's mentioned they've got problems with sound. So if you're in Zoom with us, could you type and let us know how the sound is for you? Hopefully it's just, other people have said their sound is great. So good to hear. So if you've got poor sound, maybe check the recording. Yeah, this should be absolutely fine. Cool. Yeah. So how do people identify that this work is something that they need? And obviously this audience that we're sharing this with tonight are mostly practitioners. And I know when we spoke, we resonated with each other about how the voice is such an indicator of what's going on with the person. And, I wonder if you could speak to that element of co-regulation and also non-analytical assessment, but picking up the emotional or tone of this person through having an awareness of voice. So if practitioners are interested in this area and they come and do your course, I'm sure they will gain more of an awareness of noticing what's happening in the voice of their clients and ourselves, and then how we can be more aware when speaking and utilizing our voice as that tool for co-regulation.
Yes. So, well, first of all, people either sort of feel drawn to this work or often feel drawn to this work. I must say, people who already have experience with embodiment, people who are interested in embodiment and who have done embodiment, they already have a level of attunement and an ability to connect to their body. And so I think these are the people that actually benefit most because they're already on that journey. Whereas if you come for something completely different, it can, depending on your level of vocal embodiment, it can be more difficult or easier. It depends very much on your physicality and how that's connected to the voice. What this course certainly will give a practitioner is a sense of their own voice and how to work with their own voice. And it really is the only way to understand other voices is really understanding your own voice. Mm-hmm. It really is like that, because unless you have the experience from the inside, you can't relate. And even if I sort of give theory about how to hear other voices, it'll be a sort of a cognitive understanding and not an experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. Mm-hmm. And when we speak, these different in different embodiment work, we often drop our awareness to different places in the body. I've seen you write about being in your gut versus your throat or the whole body. Where is our center of awareness? Can you grant the fullness of your awareness to a certain place? How does that play in this, particularly in a space holding capacity as a practitioner? How do you support people to place that awareness in a certain place there? How does it change for you? How have you found it changes? Is there like a common preference for people? Space holding, for example, is it the whole body or in their pelvis or in their belly and gut? Or
I like to use a metaphor here, that the voice and sound waves are similar to dampness and water. And dampness gets into the cracks and it seeps through and it goes everywhere. And essentially, that's what sound waves do. I don't prescribe people where the vibration should be. It really is an open exploration because, you know, every single body is different. The truth of the matter is that, however, if you have a lot of tension around your neck and shoulders, and there's something in your system where you've got a sort of habitual bracing pattern, you might, and your breathing is potentially shallow, you might only feel the vibrations like right deep in your throat. Now, when that is the case, we need to work on how to relax that and how to sit in certain positions and try and create a deeper relaxation so the vibrations can start sort of moving out and moving into different areas of the body. But that's exactly the work. That's exactly what we're going to be looking at, how to do that.
Beautiful. Mm. Yeah, and different, I liken this seems similar to different approaches to breathing. You know, breathing can be the master, or you can try and master your breathing with certain techniques and tell the body, take it under conscious control and tell it how to breathe and it should be doing this, and allowing the emergent intelligence of the innate wisdom of embodiment to highlight and show any obstacles and also be the medicine to deal with them, mm-hmm. rather than this is how we'll breathe, this is how you'll use your voice ideally, and it being a template to follow.
Yes, it's exactly that, Julian. I really love the way you said that. And that developed from my own practice because I couldn't respond. It's like, you know, do it this way and do it that way. And you just get tighter and tighter. And so, so I know it from my own experience. Yeah. Another beautiful thing in connection with this is that so sound waves go to the place that's tight. And through the vibration, that tightness loosens up. So although you might become aware of a place that's holding tension, in a way, it's like turning on the tap that hasn't been turned on for a long time. And, you know, when you turn on a tap that hasn't had water run through it, you know, it's going to splutter, it's going to dribble, it's going to, you know, there's all the calc there that's stopped up. Mm. And it's a bit similar with the voice. So, you know. The sound waves and that, you know, allow the flow to happen. And the more you get into the flow and the more you know how to allow that whole flow through your body, that's when you start, you know, experiencing what it's about. And the more flow comes through, the more you allow. It's that thing, you know, the more you flow, the more you give, and the more you give, the more you flow.
Beautiful. Mm. And moving from primal sound into words as symbols and metaphors, the bit I've experienced about imbuing or saturating the word in a felt sense, so feeling it first and then allowing the word to carry upon the felt sense of the word, rather than, you know, we see with people's eye movements when they're searching for a word in a cognitive way, like, what is that word? Whereas what I've seen in embodied voice work and experienced is if we first feel the word, then there's a completely different quality to speaking the word. And it's more likened to the primal, perhaps using your wording tonight, a primal sound that a baby might make, which is expressing a desire or a need or a feeling, rather than a descriptor, which is a step away from the felt, felt sense.
Mm.
How do you have any, will we look at that in the course, how you support people to move when using language into feeling those words and trusting the flow?
In the course, I think we're just going to be focusing more on how to create the flow before going to that step.
Sure.
But I love that you mentioned that, and it is what I basically call embodied, you know, speaking from being, actually, which is something that I'm trying always to sort of communicate to people. And it is that when you feel that presence in your body and you feel the vibration in your body while you're communicating, then it transmits. And but we start with baby steps. We'll be looking at how to use, you know, the articulators, the tongue, the lips, some of the jaw to start making sounds and feel and integrating that.
And so if as practitioners we're supporting the client in a client-led or coaching model, even if we're bodywork practitioners, if we're trying to elicit their choice, their informed consent or their informed choice of their treatment, and they're speaking from an embodied connection to what they really want and need, would you say that's something like finding their voice? What does that really mean in practice? You know, if they can come and describe that they're in a certain type of pain, but in Body Poem, the modality that I work with Katie, we help people to really speak to a different layer than just describing the symptomatics, which might not be present in that moment. So it sounds like you're also supporting people to find their true voice or find their voice when there's the empowerment piece where they can start to voice what they're feeling and marry the felt sense and the vocalization of the felt sense more and more to trust it. Absolutely. And communicate it. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes with that, it's actually even a simple trick just to slow people down. Mm. If you are a coach and somebody has said something incredibly profound and they've rushed over it and said it very factually, just inviting them to slow down, to stop and to feel it and to speak it from that connection to how it feels, that can sometimes create a massive response, sometimes even reaction. Sometimes it can be too much for a client to actually go there, and that's why they skip over it. But other times that can be the invitation to actually connect to the feeling in connection.
Yeah, invitation being a key word, isn't it? Because if you say, something just happened there, and analytically you ask them to slow down, then they feel under even more pressure to highlight what it might be. And what brought you to evolve this work rather than teaching singing? If you're an opera singer and you presumably loved it, what brought you down this route to work in this way rather than, for example, teaching singing?
Well, mainly my own story and the profound interest that it started to unearth, that the deeper I got into my own training, I got more into myself. I connected to myself in a way that I was not connected to beforehand through the training. One of the reasons why I didn't focus on operatic, you know, teaching singing or is because it's so, it's very, very competitive, which can cause a lot of, you know, stress and performance pressure. And because of that, the training is very always focused on the end product and disregards the process. The process is important to me.
Yeah.
That's simple.
Cool. And let's tell people a bit about how you work. So you teach, you run groups, you do one-to-one coaching. And what's your website for people to search if they're on Facebook and are just straying upon this live stream? How can they find out more about your work and maybe say a little bit about how people can access you and what you offer?
Okay, so my website's youandyourvoice.com, and you can find various offers there. I do a regular taster session once in a while, so people can sign up for that and just get a taste of what it's like. I also run a course, my signature course really, called Sound and Soma, which I do online and in person. I actually hope to be getting back in person, because there's nothing like working in person, because although online is absolutely great and I love it, elements get lost, and it's the element of hearing each other in a room and hearing the sounds we make sort of reverberate off the walls, and feeling the effects of other people's sounds in your body. So I hope to get back, you know, in person again. I also do the Sound of Grief, which is more about using your voice to process grief, and that's a combination of, you know, sharing about grief and giving space for any sounds that express grief to come out, because that can be profoundly expansive, actually.
Yeah. You use toning when working with emotion and grief and things.
Yes, yeah. Yes. What often happens is that people, when you invite them to tone, they don't want to tone. And that speaks a lot. I mean, you know, silence is even more important than the words or the sounds often. And the silence needs to be respected.
And how do you find toning and the vibrational frequency of pain or anguish or emotion helps people to move or integrate?
Yes, it can be phenomenal for people. And at the same time, I'm cautious, because it can cause re-traumatization. And I've witnessed quite a few vocal coaches sort of encouraging people to express.
Yes, me too.
And you know, knowing what I do about trauma, and that's why I say this is a trauma-informed approach, I know how traumatizing that can be. And so we need to be careful with it and to track what's happening. Because otherwise, what can happen is that you have an amazing expansive feeling, but if it's too much for you to process, or you don't get the care afterwards to integrate it, your energy systems just shut back down again. And it can get locked back down into the system even worse than before. So we need to avoid this huge, expansion and then contraction, and find more, where is the edge? Where is that edge in my communication? That said, sound absolutely can help us transmute pain. If we manage to hit the vibrational frequency of where that pain is. And that's not necessarily easy. And I'm also careful with things like this, because anybody with chronic pain, I don't want to say, you know, I know that you can heal all chronic pain with sound or something like that. However, I definitely would encourage to explore it. And you know, the work that I do definitely creates a space where you can explore that.
You know the musician Tim Wheater?
Oh.
Because he was touring with the Rhythmics, a very famous band he was touring with, and he took some, I think, just drinking water on the tour and became paralyzed, and he used toning to regain full mobility, and now he's a touring musician with many CDs out. I've seen him live on stage with his bare feet, and he was literally paralyzed, and the only sound he could make was one type of toning. And then the bandwidth opened up and got wider and wider and wider, and he regained full movement. So that's quite an epic story of sound healing. And now he
I really think we underestimate sound healing. I really do. And it's used mainly in first sort of hopeless cases, or you know, where you know, with Alzheimer's, that's when people start using sound healing. But I think we really don't use it the way we could.
Cool. So the course being focused on the nervous system, should we speak a little bit about the nervous system? Are there any questions so far? If you've joined us in Zoom, please put them in the chat box if you've got any questions for Cordelia. You can also post them on Facebook. I'll go there and check in a moment, but it's easier for those in Zoom who've known about this and signed up. We prioritize getting to your questions. So yeah, with the nervous system, as you're saying, social nervous system, people, a lot of our members love Stephen Porges' work and have done many things with John Wilkes, for example, did a whole 50 ways to engage the vagal nerve. But we did cover voice, actually. We definitely covered voice and singing. But I wonder if, from your perspective and experience, how you could speak to how toning and singing regulates the nervous system, first of all.
Well, many, multiple ways. Multiple ways. What's actually quite interesting that came to my mind when you asked that is that that the old school of bel canto, which it translates as beautiful singing, but it was a school of singing, is a type of singing where opera actually developed, used certain ways of working with the voice and imagery, similar to what Peter Levine works with when he does trauma therapy. And it's really interesting to see the overlap. So that's just a little interesting one there. But the voice is connected to, you know, that's a question, where is our voice? You know, is it in the larynx, or is it in the gut, or is it the whole body? And I come from the attitude of the voice is the whole body. So it's the complex interplay between different body systems. So it's the digestive system, it's the nervous system, it's the endocrine system, you know, and the respiratory system and the circulatory system. So, you know, to name the most important ones. But so the endocrine system, lymphatic system, are very, very much connected to epigenetics and how we feel. And the thing is that when we tone extensively and we sing extensively, we are inhaling very, very deeply, which obviously increases blood flow and circulation. But it also sends, as I said, the vibrations of sound waves through our body. In particular, these vibrations go along our nervous system and create a lot of vagal tone. On top of that, we have, you know, we have the glandular system, and these vibrations regulate, actually act to sort of create a gentle sonic massage in the glands. Yeah. And, you know, we've got like a butterfly shaped gland around our larynx, you know, one of the biggest ones, and all of this really impacts it. And anybody who's sung will have experienced it and know it.
I was wondering, you mentioned about building vagal tone. I wonder what your felt sense description is of that building in the system. I'm remembering times doing voice work and getting a sense of like layers of honey or layers of paint building that sense of calm, centered. But I wonder whether you've shared what that vagal tone building feels like in the system, yourself or others or students building
that. Yeah, that's a lovely question. So simply by making sound, you notice, and we even do it talking, and that's why we like to talk a lot when we're nervous. It's actually because it's calming the nervous system. So after toning extensively and bringing the focus inward onto the felt sense, you notice how you get calmer and calmer and your breath deepens. And it is, as you say, you go through different layers, and you can even sort of start having a sense of the permeability of your body and how there's like the cellular breath that happens, which is in a way the sort of breathing that happens through your skin virtually. And it's a whole thing. And it's a very meditative state you get in. And that's why when I do toning exercises, we do them 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour. Because the longer you do it, the more you get into this sort of altered state of consciousness. And you feel it. And after every session, you know, I always ask everybody, you know, how are you feeling now? And everybody's like, oh, peaceful, relaxed, you know, everyone's a bit zoned out and happy.
Yeah, definitely. We've got a question from someone in Zoom here. What are your influences, Cordelia? Who has inspired you in this work?
Oh, I think it's more answered that it's my life path. So as I said, I started out with a background in operatic training, was lucky to have a technically brilliant teacher. However, he wasn't necessarily always emotionally the most attuned, let me say. And so I started seeking in different modalities and doing various other embodiment practices. But singing was my main kind of like yoga practice. And my interest has just always continued. And it's like over 20 years now. The sort of foundation is some profound knowledge around bel canto and the practices of bel canto and how they were used to develop a voice in ways that is holistic and in sync with your body's energy and enabling your voice to gain strength and your character to gain strength as your voice gains strength.
Cool. We've got a course running right now with Dean Johan, the author of Job's Body. And he was talking about the psyche and the mask and the muscles. The course is still not late, people, to sign up for that. It's the first sessions happened. The intro was free. It's available to replay. And he was talking, the reason I'm mentioning this is he was talking about the link between the psyche and the broader sense of psyche, not just the cognitive mind or mind self, but how that animates the muscles of the face as a mask and how we are all responsible for the mask that we wear 30 and onwards. You know, this is really integrated in the emotional tone that we carry and the way that we perceive the world shapes our face. So clearly this is happening in the voice as well. And I wonder how you see the connection to the psyche and the voice and people's residual tension perhaps in the body and what they bring to a session for people who are expecting to receive touch. There's probably 2-3 questions there actually.
Yeah, lots of questions there. Well, first of all, I actually noticed that course and I lit up when I saw it. I thought this is perfect. So anybody attending that course is going to so understand on a deeper level what I'm on about in our course. It's totally synchronistic. And you know, interestingly enough, in operatic tradition, teachers often talk about the mask.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because the nerve endings in the face play a huge role for the voice. And I would even go on to say that actually singing regularly creates muscles in the face. It develops the muscles and will keep you looking young. It's like a natural facelift, actually. So that's a side effect. It's not, you know, it's a side effect.
Mm-hmm.
But what was your other question? I got a bit lost there.
No, it's fine. The link between our voice and our psyche as an expression, and perhaps when it's not in full flow or embodied, how that implicates or ripples into an adjustment, a censoring, a positioning, alteration of that flow, and how we might read that in the voice of people coming when they're coming for touch, and how we might use an awareness of bodily tension affecting voice to support them with that, or bring awareness without pointing it out in a critical way, but how we could slowing our own voice down, for example, and like you said, asking them to repeat something or say that was interesting what you just shared about, you know, we noticed that they've skirted over something. So was that a moment of bypassing or disassociation, or they're not ready to unpack it, but they might just out of their default mode be brushing over it because they've not been with someone who's able to be present with it. And bringing their awareness back to it shows them, maybe if they feel it and it's a felt sense, that it is safe here to share that. Are ways that I have seen that we can work with these things. But my question was, like, if they come into our practice, how an awareness of voice and the awareness of the connection between the psyche and the voice and bodily tension and its impact upon the voice can help us bring that.
Yeah. So I'd like to first perhaps talk briefly about the bodily tension and the touch. What I love about voice is that when you work with your own voice, you are actually touching your own body. And the, you know, it really is like touching yourself, and pun intended, you know, it really is, it's incredibly intimate. And so by working with voice in a somatic way, you really start to explore the relationship that you have with yourself on a somatic level. So you feel you're also nourishing yourself through your sound, because often we lose energy through talking, and by using the voice correctly, we're actually replenishing our energy levels and our batteries. When it comes to the tension levels, it's basically only different tension levels. So if we think of somebody who is holding a tension level in their body that's too tense for the body's natural frequency, then sound can help us adjust it, because we can let out or you know, let that steam go, and then the system relaxes. So it's not about anything being wrong, but rather seeing what is the frequency often carries an emotion. And sometimes even what I've experienced, like some people might suddenly hear themselves make a sound, and that sound is loaded with emotion for them. And then they can start learning how to make that sound and sort of, you know, pendulating, letting that emotion go bit by bit by working with that sound. So those two things in sort of in connection with what you said, but something else you'd like to sort of.
Well, we have another question. Do you have any tips or suggestions for someone who feels like they don't have a voice or are not being heard?
Okay, it's a beautiful question, but one that I actually often hear. So first of all, we all have a voice, because we all have a body. And secondly, often there's a conflation between not feeling heard and somebody not being able to hear you. Being heard is a really beautiful experience, and in order to cultivate and grow your voice, you need to be heard, because you need that reflection, you need that mirroring back that creates that loop, that the co-regulation. However, and I need to say this often, that some people don't hear, and it's not necessarily about your voice. And in that case, it's important to strengthen hearing your own voice, which you know, metaphorically also means hearing your truth, and hearing your needs and emotions, and knowing what is right for you, even if it's not reflected back. And that needs to be strengthened.
Fantastic. So I wonder if that's answered your question, the person that asked it. Back onto the nervous system. John has talked about this in the vagal course that he did, but prosody, do you want to say something about prosody in terms of how we read each other and how we, you know, if we don't hear, are we hearing the prosody in someone's voice and the intonation? Is it the same? And how does it differ from hearing it well and picking up upon it and not?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hugely complex subject. And it's very connected to hearing. So if children, for example, have been shouted at, they might, as a defense mechanism, just block out certain sounds and might even have, you know, gaps in their hearing. Now that affects the voice. It affects how we speak and it affects how we hear people. So to start with that, thing is, the whole, it's a very, very complex topic. Prosody is basically the inflection, so the rising and the sinking of the voice. And the more tension there is, the more the voice rises. That's why lots of people, when they get angry, their voice will rise. However, and this is always a good example, not everybody's voice rises when they're angry, yeah? Because some people still manage to breathe more deeply and fully and to let that energy run through their bodies in a different way. The thing is, when your voice gets high, when you get angry, is that you actually have got so much energy in your body that you're starting to, the body's starting to constrict. Your breathing isn't deep enough and the voice box goes up and the tension comes in, and then, you know, that's when we get, you know, screechy voices. But as I said, it can vary for people a lot. It is also a phenomenon that people who are very depressed or that have trauma might have either a very monotonous sounding voice, so not much variation in pitch, because variation in pitch is the color. And we can have gaps. And in fact, everybody has gaps unless you really have trained your voice. You might, you know, have a sort of deeper voice and a higher voice and a gap in between. And that is connected to the breathing, and that is connected. If you have a gap and it's a place that you can't increase volume, or that you can't sort of go in between the high and the low, then that range might be loaded with some emotion that you've blocked out, that you haven't allowed yourself to feel. And so by going there and working with that range, some of that emotion that's stored in the body might come up during the vocalization or during the practice. And then I always, you know, say, take your time, you know, allow whatever's coming up to come up, but breathe through it and stay with the sensations.
It sounds like it's very linked to response flexibility then, because if they are getting angry but can breathe and choose not to express that tension, but have more latitude or prosody available to them, then there's that, to me, is suggesting more conscious choice in how they respond rather than react to a situation that's triggering them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And more physical ability to respond.
Mm.
Like physical consciousness. And also the ability to allow a lot of energy through the system. And some people have a greater capacity for that than others.
Mm.
And some bodies are more designed for that than others. We all have things that we're really good at, and then other places where we have our difficulties.
Sure. I wondered in this last part if anybody's got any more questions, but to go back to the element of co-regulation and how we do this with our voice, and why the voice is so important for co-regulating and how we do it.
Yeah. So it regulates ourself, so we can regulate our own body with our voice. But it also transmits to the others. And it conveys that you have the capacity to breathe deeply. Like just now, if I'm sort of slowing down a bit and I take time to breathe and I feel my voice while I'm talking to you, then you're feeling me feeling you. And that is when it starts to happen. And you can even tell by my voice now, I'm a little less excited because I'd also still have the tendency to get excited but it reflects immediately. And when I can sink in more into how I'm feeling and just connect and talk from there while I'm feeling me, then you feel that. It's really simple.
Yeah. The turning on that receptivity to your own felt sense, noticing, is then noticed by the other, and it's an invitation for them to do the same, or at least, and we have our mirror neurons, and then we modulate with rapport building, that kind of flow unconsciously.
Absolutely.
And bringing conscious awareness to it as a practitioner, we can better support the person to land in our session, I guess.
And you know, it's really interesting because even a person that you might think is a bit disconnected from their body, when you start feeling that sort of receptive listening, I call it. So you're really just sort of listening through your whole body. When you switch that on, the other person is going to feel that, and they're going to have a response.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're sort of allowing the vibrations and the sounds they make to penetrate your system, they feel received.
And then there's a safety in that, which is reciprocated for them to drop in.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. You wrote something here about our voices determining our relationships. So our self-receptivity, if we're receptive to ourselves and our own feelings, we're going to have deeper and more meaningful relationships based on that felt sense of trust and openness and two-way receptivity to what's really going on, rather than skirting over with mental projections and missing each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Yeah.
Also, perhaps a nice analogy is, I'm sure many of the practitioners have probably also seen, there's this lovely video on YouTube of a father toning om to a crying baby. And it's just the most lovely example of how the vibrations that in the father's deep sounds that are making just transmit to the baby and help the baby release something or relax. And you can just see how this baby just relaxes, and you know, sometimes perhaps it's a tummy ache or something, but that vibration can just shift what's there and creates a sense of being cradled or sort of wrapped in a warm blanket of sound.
Someone's asked in the chat about longer form courses. How long is Sound and Soma?
12 weeks originally. I was running a short version for 6 weeks. So I'm sort of still varying what works for most people.
And you said you work with three mystical principles that include altered states of consciousness. Can you speak about these principles a little bit and how they relate to the voice?
Yeah, sure. So one is the breath. So we look at breath and learn about the breath as a principle. And the second is rhythm. And again, looking at rhythm as a principle, and I'll speak to this in a moment. And then the third one is sound. So sound is a whole chapter of sound waves and vibration, how it deals with the nervous system. But rhythm and breath are also principles. So, and why I talk about principles, because you can spend like 3 years, or like I have been, 20 years working with your breath, and you still discover new things. If you take these three things and you work with them intensely and start understanding them and unpacking them and going in, how can we work with rhythm with our voice? There's different ways. There's external rhythm, but there's a rhythm that comes from language, you know, how the syllables and consonants chop up the sort of extended breath. That is also a rhythm. So yeah, we're basically working with those three principles, and they create the foundation to really have altered states of consciousness. And you know, again, it's when you do it for a long time and you practice, you get into a sort of trance state. Is there anything you want to add to that, Julian? Because you with your voice work, you've experienced obviously a lot as well, right?
Yeah, well, I used to go to singing lessons when I was very young. I started singing when I was 3 and then got lessons. And then I had a big, I stopped about age 16. I was in a choir, but recently took up rag practice. Yeah, and I find the specificity of listening, because with rag, there's something called a min, which is the transition between two notes, and it's very specific. And you might think, because there's so much structure there, that it's restrictive. But when you really, and I'm just very much beginning, but when you make that journey between the two notes that doesn't miss anything out, it's almost like what you were saying about the spectrum of ability to touch and reach different parts of the emotion. Or yourself, and finding which parts are difficult. But that for me at the moment is just my music teacher's ear, to be able to hear the difference between two notes and traveling from one to the other. And then he'll demo that it's not like this. It's, and you know, and the timing. I'm finding that opens up inner spaces in me that it's like inner engineering, you know,
that's beautiful. It's very much, yeah, it's very much that.
Someone's put here, I once heard that each organ has a corresponding sound, e.g. the sound of the liver is S. Any thoughts on this? Yeah, in Taoism, there's the six healing sounds. I've studied and practiced those with Qigong movements. They do have these different sounds. Yeah.
I cover that a bit actually in Sound and Soma. Some of them, in particular, I cover the lung sound and the kidney sound, and it's very much. I know that Mantak Chia teaches this, but he uses a lot of visualization. I don't use visualization. Mm-hmm. I use bringing awareness to the organs in your mouth that are producing those sounds. Mm-hmm. And there's a particular reason I do that, because it's the organs, by shaping the tongue and bringing consciousness to your tongue and your lips and how the sound is made and what you're feeling there, that the real magic happens. Mm. Because that affects the whole of the rest of the body.
Mm. Mm. Interesting. Yeah. Mm. Cool. Someone said here they'd like to know more about pendulating. She thinks you mentioned, called it, working through the emotion, working through an emotion through toning. We had, I think it's, I've forgotten his first name, something Felly did a webinar for us on form and function, I think it was called. It was beautiful, about slowing people down. For example, if they do a gesture when they're talking about presenting this newborn baby or something, and they went like this, and so he gets them to see the slow that movement down, which I guess is similar to this pendulating of we found a sound which is holding an emotion, we bring the awareness to it, and they can choose to use that as a tool to express or to feel what it is to witness that emotion, because now it has a voice in this sound.
Yeah, it's very much, it's all of that, Julian. It's a slowing down. I very much encourage slowing down. In fact, it's all really slow and meditative. So, and then I also like the analogy, pendulation is a bit like tipping your toe in cold water. You put it in and you take it out again, and then you put it back in again. And it's so you start adapting, and so you're in control of how much emotion you allow, because we don't want the whole body to be flooded with emotion and then get overwhelmed and shut down again. So it's tipping in and finding that edge and just lightly touching it, and then touching it so much that you can, that you are okay with the emotion that you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And if it starts being too much, then you back off again. And then you know, come into the present, look around you, name what's there, feel your feet, open your eyes, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, thanks. People are thanking you for the answers to the other question. Maybe one last question here. Someone said, can you speak about accents?
Okay. Well, accents are very different, because accent has to do with an identity, that belongs to a dialect or a country you're from. And accent has a lot to do with the vowel sounds and using different colours for vowel sounds. That's basically the main difference with accents.
Mm.
So working with accent is unique, because then you focus on imitating or replicating vowel sounds that you want to replicate. So I don't know, if for example somebody with an Australian accent wants to sound like a Brit, then they need to imitate the English vowel sounds. Mm-hmm. So you're coming from hearing it and then you're imitating it, obviously, and that's a particular kind of teaching where you're also focusing on how to produce those vowel sounds. When I work with vowel sounds in Sound and Soma, perhaps we'll do another course with vowel sounds with the embodied learning, right, in collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
I like to focus on what I call the five pure vowel sounds. Mm. And there's a particular reason for that, which has to do with, again, with bel canto. And it has to do with the five pure vowel sounds allow you to tone vowels in ways that really build your voice and strengthen your voice and let the sound take a shape. A particular shape, and then you're working with that kind of, it's like a particular flavor or a particular dimension that includes a particular coloring and shape of a vowel.
Mm, wonderful. Thank you so much, Cordelia. This is the beginning of sharing this excitement we had of embodiment and voice with the embodied health community, with an intention to keep having you back and exploring, and maybe even bring others in to speak and have the discussion. The last point you were saying about the person asking about pendulating feels similar to things where I've seen, you know, building a relationship to that part where bringing choice, and it's client-led into, well, I'm going to touch back in with that, dip my toe in the water. And this is reclaiming exiled parts that have perhaps due intelligent trauma responses have been taken out of being bypassed or being taken out of circulation so that they're not causing that recurrent non-resolved trauma. But I think it's all very, very interesting. And we would like to have you back to do other webinars and perhaps indeed other courses to focus and take people on journeys in different directions, as well as obviously sharing the awareness of your main offering there on your website so that people can stay with you for a longer process. So I look forward to the course coming up and seeing more of how this unpacks. And I recommend, if you've enjoyed tonight, to take a look at the website. The link is in the Facebook post if you're watching this as a recording, and I'll post it again there in the Zoom chat. Thank you so much, Cordelia, for joining us this evening, and I look forward to seeing you in a few weeks' time for that course beginning for the three-part series. Members get 20% off our courses if you join, and you get one course per year if you sign up for the annual package. So if you've enjoyed this evening and you're not a member, I encourage you to join and join Cordelia. And I think it'll be me hosting you. So join us both for that 3-week series.
Awesome. Thank you, Julian. Thank you.
Good night, everyone. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.